Welcome to a Bowden Education podcast. In this episode, I'm with Paul Watts, Michael Fullard, and Professor Andrew Peterson, and we're going to talk about understanding character education, linked to their forthcoming text that's available mid-August. Paul is currently a lecturer on the MA in Character Education and joined the Jubilee Centre for Character and Virtues as a research fellow in 2017 and has contributed to developing the practical application of character education theory and research as part of the teacher education project. Within this, he has worked closely with school leaders and practitioners in the research and development of a continuing professional development programme for senior leaders. Paul previously worked as a teacher and a member of a senior leadership team in a primary school. Michael is a research fellow at the Jubilee Centre for Character and Virtues, joining the centre full-time in May 2017. Mike has over 9 years teaching experience in the primary sector, where he held roles such as head of curriculum and phase leader. Michael previously worked for the Jubilee Centre in 2016 as a teaching fellow. During this period, Michael was lead author on the Teaching Character Through the Primary Curriculum project, which looked at developing character in Key Stage 2 pupils as they moved to secondary school. He has also contributed towards the development of the Character Education Evaluation Handbook for schools. Michael worked on the Teacher Education project, looking at character perspectives and pre-service teachers and designing and producing the centre's award-winning CPD programme, Leading Character Education in Schools. Andrew Peterson is Professor of Character and Citizenship Education and a Deputy Director of the Jubilee Centre for Character and Virtues. His research focuses on the relationship between character and citizenship education, and he is currently leading a research project on civic virtues through service to others. His most recent books are Civility and Democratic Education, Ethics and the Good Teacher, Global Citizenship Education in Australian Schools, and the Palgrave Handbook of Citizenship Education. He is an Associate Editor of the British Journal of Educational Studies, Associate Editor of the Asian Pacific Journal of Education, Editor of the Journal of Philosophy in Schools, and Deputy Editor of Citizenship Teaching and Learning. He is also currently adjunct professor of education at the University of South Australia. Thank you, three of you, for joining us today to talk about character education when you clearly have such busy lives. I don't know, actually, Andrew, how you managed to do all of that. I barely managed to say it all, to be honest. So I won't ramble on anymore. We're going to hand over to you and to talk about character education. But firstly, I think what's most important is that we understand what you understand character education to be. So, Paul, what's character education?
Thanks, Catherine. So we are thinking about character education within a school context, and we understand character education as the promotion of positive personal qualities in young people. And we call those positive personal qualities, character virtues. So when we think of character education, we think about the intentional effort in schools to develop good individuals and contributors to society. That's character education for us in a nutshell. And when we talk about character education in schools and how this might be seen, we talk about it as being something that is caught from the ethos, the environment and the culture of the school. Something that's taught through the activities that we plan for and engage young people in. And it's also something that is sought by young people within the schools. And I'm sure we'll pick up on caught, taught and sought as we go on with this podcast.
Michael, character education for you.
Thank you, Catherine. Well, for me, I think it's important to say that the development of pupils' character is not something new, and this goes on in all schools, regardless of whether they're calling it character education or not. But what character education is for me, it's about making the implicit more explicit. So it's schools actively, and teachers, and actually all staff in schools, looking for those opportunities where they can provide experiences for pupils and staff actually to develop their character. So as Paul said, it often comes largely through the ethos and culture of a school. And when you go into a school, you can kind of get that feeling immediately if it's a school, what we call a school of character, by the atmosphere, the way there's mutual respect between staff and pupils, by the look of the physical environment. It can also be taught, as Paul said, and we see this through many different ways, through discrete curriculum in some schools, but largely going across the curriculum and within and across subjects, especially things such as PSHE and form time. And for me as well, there's this element of sort character. So schools need to think about what sort of pupils they want to develop and what they want to be like when they leave their school. And I think we all want our pupils and even our children to want to seek character. And I think that's a major element of character education. So pupils leaving school actively wanted to develop their own character and become better citizens in society.
And as you say, Michael, I think anyone listening to this will think, ah, yeah, we do that. We just don't call it character education. But maybe as we go through the discussion today, it will help people sort of categorise and make explicit what they're doing. Andrew, character education for you.
Thanks, Catherine. Well, Paul and Michael have covered many aspects of character education already, and these are set out also in the Jubilee Centre's framework for character education that many schools use. But just to reiterate a couple of really important points they've said. The first is it's not really a question of whether teachers and schools and other educators are impacting on pupils' character development, but rather it's how they do that, whether that development is intentional, whether it's explicit, and also whether it's positive or not. And I think something you've already mentioned as well is that this is very much, or developing children's character, the type of people that children are and they are to become, is one of the main reasons why teachers enter the profession in the first place. So a number of Jubilee Centre studies have said this, and we know that when we go and talk to schools, so some of the head teachers we work with very closely will say, we've always done character education, we've just not called it character education, but we've been there to, you know, why we became teachers in the first place, and what we try to do in our school is to try to develop young people who have these positive, stable, internalized dispositions that we call virtues, such as honesty, kindness, compassion, service, and so on. But I think one of the key distinctions there, and perhaps these are things we'll talk about more in the podcast, are about the difference perhaps between values and virtues, and why the language of virtue and character is really important. So virtually all schools I know of we'll have a set of values, or we'll talk about the values of the schools, but these aren't necessarily things that become internalized and stable. So these are in the way that virtues would. So I think there's a distinction to be made between virtues and values that's quite important. And a second distinction is about the level of permanence and embeddedness. So one of our colleagues in the center, Tom Harrison, who we mentioned in the book that we'll speak about later, says that the character and virtues have to be lived within a school, not laminated. So we might have these words around the school and have them up on the wall and on the school website, but actually they need a permanence there. And I was talking to a school head teacher for a primary school, large primary school in Hampshire yesterday, who said, actually, you know, everybody within the school sees themselves as a character educator and as part of this process. And that includes the site manager, that includes the lunchtime staff, the teachers, the parents. And it's really, you know, through the language of character and virtues and this shared understanding of the importance of helping young people to become and to think about and reflect on what it means to be honest, what it means to be kind, and so on. But this is really a deep and shared venture for schools, and that needs to be embedded. It needs to be all throughout the organisation and indeed within the community.
Just to say, I remember, because I've been fortunate enough to review your forthcoming book, and I can remember and to prove I have read it. I remember smiling and nodding to myself about the lived, not laminated. I like that phrase. But just picking up on a few things that you've said before we move on to the next question, is it important in your mind that we are talking in terms of, should we say, for argument's sake, labelling? Is it important that we give this teaching and these experiences that we are giving to students in our schools, is it important that we call it character education? Is it important we refer to values and virtues? Or does it not matter if we don't, but they're kind of happening?
Yeah, it does matter because, and actually we would say it matters based on our research and as university academics and former teachers, but actually what's more important is when we go and speak to schools who take a character education approach, it matters in terms of that shared language and the vocabulary that all members of the school community can come together. And I think a key point of this, sometimes critics of character education think that we're saying, well, this is what it means to be kind and you have to conform. But character education is not about conformity. We do have a notion of what it means to be kind, what it means to be honest, but actually, and our work is informed by Aristotle and a neo-Aristotelian conception of character. But Aristotle has the master virtue or the meta virtue of phronesis, which is practical wisdom. And this really points us to the fact that in our lives, as adults, as well as children, that we have situations where there are conflicts. You know, there'll be a situation where we have to choose between the kind thing to do and being honest. And actually it's talking about those experiences, having the practice of those experiences, critically reflecting on them with others and understanding that language and that virtue. That's really important. And again, what we find from schools is it's that shared language that's impacting on parents as well in the community. So children are talking about, well, was this a kind thing to do? Was it an honest thing to do? Why was I honest? Could I have been, should I have prioritised honesty over kindness when my friend asked me a particular question? So the schools and school leaders and indeed pupils and families are saying to us, actually, that language is very important. And just to make a brief distinction between values and virtues, the key difference really is that I might value something, but just because I value something doesn't mean I live by it. Whereas if I possess a virtue, it doesn't really make sense to say I have the virtue of compassion unless I'm trying to be compassionate myself, or the virtue of kindness or honesty. So for me, that language, and for our schools, that language is fundamental, firstly in giving a focus, but also in terms of that embeddedness and that depth and permanence. That again, Michael's already touched upon this. It's really hard to quantify unless you're there yourself. And the example that I think we use in the book that we always use is, it's a bit like when you're out and you see a beautiful scenery and you take a picture. The picture never quite captures what it is like in that moment. And I think that's the same of schools in many ways, that we know it when we're there and we can try and explain it, but you can't quite nail it down unless you've experienced it yourself and been there and observed it and witnessed it.
Okay, and so I think you're absolutely right. And in my mind, this is an area that's so important and perhaps more important than ever of late, as we move forward with students and children coming out of the education system not feeling prepared necessarily to go into the world. But if we don't give it these titles and make the implicit, like Michael said, explicit, it just becomes, oh yeah, that other stuff we do, and it's probably called stuff. And Paul.
Thanks, Catherine. Just to pick up on the kind of intentionality of it, I was fortunate enough to work in a school before I joined the Jubilee Centre that was absolutely fantastic. The work they did around personal development was outstanding. They didn't use the words character education. It wasn't part of my vocabulary at the time, and until I engaged with some of the Jubilee Centre's work in my second year as a teacher. And when we think about why might we start using the vocabulary of character education and having kind of an intentional approach towards it? Well, if we leave it to be reactive, and something that we talk about with children when there's an issue in school or when it seems like it fits into the curriculum, that's something at least. But an intentional planned approach where it's planned into the curriculum, where everybody's on the same page, I think it all comes down to this shared, planned, intentional effort, in that everybody knows what they're aiming to do, what they're aiming for the children entering the school in reception or in nursery to leave with by the time they leave in year six in primary schools or after sixth form in secondary schools. And if everybody's on the same page, if staff coming into that school that's got this intentional effort towards character education know what the school's about and know how the school develop character, it's going to make it more effective and it's going to benefit the young people within the school. Overall.
Fab. So let's move on then to think about the benefits and positive impacts of developing character education in schools, Michael.
Thank you. Yeah, I suppose to put simply in one sense, one of the positive impacts, and we've talked about this already, is that the notion is we want to develop good citizens who can go out into society and make a positive impact. And that might mean in their local community, might mean nationally, might even mean internationally. But we also want these people to leave school having what we call the character virtues to be good friends, good family members, good brothers and sisters, potentially good fathers, good mothers. So I think that's obviously one of the major impacts. And that's why we tell schools to think carefully about what virtues you're picking for your context. No one school will pick the same necessarily set of virtues. They may pick different amounts, varying from 3 up to 10 to 12. But so we ask them to think carefully about that and developing these individuals. But also we found when we talked to schools that it's had an impact on things such as attendance. Schools that have got an explicit character approach say how attendance, not only of pupils, but staff has risen. They look at behaviour incidents. I recently spoke to a school that changed their behaviour, looking at the positive impacts of character instead of looking at those negative actions. And they've suddenly had it's taken 6 or so months, but it's had an influence. So character education can have wide-ranging things. And I'd like to think as well that if you're developing pupils who are honest, who are resilient, who are compassionate, who are confident, that you would just assume, having been teaching myself, that over time that's going to impact on their academic achievement. They're more likely to want to study harder. And character education isn't necessarily about getting better grades, but I think anybody who looks at this deeply and who's been a teacher themselves would understand that if you are developing these character virtues within pupils, that surely it will have that knock-on effect. But this issue actually is something that we can test a lot in the Jubilee Centre about how do we measure character. And it's one thing we get asked a lot by schools. Like, how do we measure this? Because we live in a culture, especially in schools, where we want to measure everything. So we want to show progress. Have they moved from this to this? And it is a very difficult topic to tackle. I mean, how do you measure character? And many people have tried and unfortunately not been able. So we encourage schools not necessarily to measure the character of their pupils, but to evaluate their provision. What provision are we providing? And I think we don't need a metric to be able to understand if our pupils are developing character. As Andrew said, when you walk in the school, you just get this feel. If you're a primary school teacher and you've got the same class every day for a whole year, you see this development, you see pupils becoming more compassionate, showing empathy to their friends or to their or to your colleagues. And I think that's the important bit about character, not to kind of put this metric on it, but to get a feel for it. And I'm sure Andrew and Paul can expand upon that as well.
Is there any other positive impacts that we feel character education within schools will bring? So we've got attendance, potential outcomes, behaviour, as 3 key measured impacts.
Yeah, thanks. If I can add a few things there, just to build on what Michael said. One thing that we found from schools, and it's not the case that all schools who have developed good character education have instigated character education because the schools have been struggling. So we work with a number of schools who are, you know, really good schools have had a really positive trajectory whether they've built character education on past foundations or whether they've developed that through character education. But it is notable that a number of schools we've worked with have said, actually, we turn to character education, this explicit intentional approach to character education, when we were sort of at a low ebb. So whether that was a low ebb because they had constant cycles of change of leadership within the school that hadn't really worked, that the measures that had previously been introduced were very short term and limited and weren't sustainable in that way, that they've, you know, just been through periods, whether it was about standing in the school community or, you know, being undersubscribed. And a number of those schools have said to us, well, actually, what this has done is fundamentally improved the confidence and the sense of belonging for pupils fundamentally, improve relationships between staff and pupils as well, but also has fundamentally shaped and changed relationships between the school and the community. And a prime example of that would be Aylesford School in Kent, who shortly before the first lockdown, it's a school that had had a series of changes in leadership, but shortly before the school before the lockdown in March 2020, they were Ofsted-ed. And the Ofsted report, and we shouldn't always obviously be guided solely by Ofsted, but the Ofsted report noted how the school had been transformed through its focus on character education, through its change in the relationships, its relationship with the community, how the community understood and saw the school. And so I think those benefits go beyond the school gates as well as working within the school gates. And I guess one other thing I'd just like to add that comes through time and time again is that character education doesn't solve everything. So we just be careful that we're not presenting this really rosy view. But what school said, and there's lots of actually sometimes quite powerful examples where schools have gone through some really difficult times, whether it's to do with violence or death of a pupil, whatever it might be. And actually the language that shared virtues provides a foundation through which one of the school leaders we work with very closely talks about the stress points and the strength of character and their intentionality within the community comes through at these points of stress. And it doesn't necessarily solve everything, but it provides that foundation and that language and that platform through which schools can address the varied and myriad pressures that impact on them. So I think that's an important benefit as well.
Yeah, and as you're thinking, I'm cynically thinking in my mind, we really should be widening character education beyond schools. There are certain areas of society and certain areas in the public domain that could well do with some character education of late. I'm not saying anything further than that. So what would you say to schools that say, or someone that's listening, they're a teacher and they're saying, yeah, this sounds really great, but where am I going to fit it in? I'm already struggling to deliver what I'm expected to deliver. And how many times have you had that question? Michael?
We do come across that question, probably not as often as you would think, actually, because I suppose the people that do intentionally engage with us are people that are already encouraged and infused by character education. But what I often say, and to school leaders I speak to, and is that you have to be brave. Now, I don't think necessarily you should have to be brave to incorporate character. As we said, we think this should just be a part of schooling. But I think you need to be brave to make that decision that schools are about academic progress, of course, and they're always going to be measured on those test results as well. And you should not put that, necessarily to the side, but you should be brave enough to put character as an equal with it. And as we've said previously, when we answered your question about what impact it's had, and with all sorts of schools that are could be classed as failing and schools that are hugely successful, it has an impact in all those schools. So if you can see that impact, be brave, give the time. And you do need time to introduce character. You need time to introduce it to your staff, to your pupils. And I think we should stress it's not something you could make a plan for and it happens overnight or even over a term. Some of the schools we work with, such as Aylesford, that have a very strong character education approach, have embedded it over a number of years. It evolves, it develops, but you need those brave leaders to make that step and say, we are interested in developing the character of our pupils.
Andrew, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Just to build on what Michael said, I think it's absolutely crucial, and we say it in the Jubilee Centre's framework, and members of the centre would say it every time they speak, there's not a set defined blueprint for how a school will develop character education. So schools have to think about this and develop it. A Catholic school might develop it slightly different from, a non-faith school, but the key point is that it's intentional and that it's planned. So there are some sort of commonalities between schools, but there's no precise blueprint that you can just take from one school and implement it precisely exactly. No, because schools work with different sets of pupils and communities and contexts, etc. And one thing that I think is really important, if for anybody, and we do get asked this question, that are talking about, well, how might I introduce this? What might it look like? But is to learn from the schools that have already done it and how they've developed it and how they've developed it in different ways with different emphasis and focuses over time. And so in the Jubilee Centre, for example, We have Windows in Schools document, a continuing professional development program within the book that we might talk about in a bit. We have case studies of schools. And so I think it's that celebrating and sharing of practices to say, well, this is what it looks like and how we've gone about it within our school. But every school has to sort of learn the lessons, but then make it their own as well. So I think that's sort of a crucial point. There's an Association for Character Education as well, who quite marked various schools. And again, we know from their work that schools will have their own particular emphasis on how they do it, but there will be some commonalities between them.
Cool.
Thanks. Yeah, just to build on that further again, we've had questions like the one you asked there. Every so often, we give lectures through the Jubilee Centre. We deliver lectures to those within teacher education, PGCEs, for example, or even on school centred initial teacher training. And a couple of years ago, I remember there was one question about, you know, how do I do this? I've got so much to do already. How can I do character education as well? Especially considering this individual was in their PGCE year, and obviously there's a lot going on in the PGCE year, and we understand that. We were trying to give those examples of how it's just kind of part and parcel of being an educator. And that's what we've hoped to do. Within those lectures, we share examples, but this is what we've hoped to do through the book, you know, sharing these concrete examples through what we mention in the main body of the text, but also within the case studies. The case study contributors are sharing what character education is like in their school. So I think they're really important aspects of the book, probably the most important aspects of the book. And as Andrew mentioned, there's the Association for Character Education. We also give some links to other organisations and websites where you can see more character education in action as well as the Jubilee Centre publications, where those are included.
Fab. And if you go to the Bowden Education Recommended Links page, you'll see a link there to the Jubilee Centre where you can access some of this information and case studies if you want to find out more. Andrew, do you see links between character education and the much more widely documented issues around well-being and mental health of young people?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think we have to frame them very carefully in terms of what those relationships between character education, well-being and mental health in particular actually are. And I know there's a lot of interest in this. There's more and more research being conducted to look at what those connections might be. We've already spoken about a number of the benefits and positives of character education in terms of better relationships and supporting reflection among pupils, but also among teachers and parents and other members of the community, about what it means to be kind, to be honest, to be compassionate, and so on. And that language is really important in bringing pupils, teachers, parents, communities, families, etc., together, and giving a shared sense of opening up discussions about what it means to be a good person, to be a good citizen. And within that character education supports young people and adults as well, to look within themselves, but also beyond themselves, to think about their relations with the world. Now, within that, there's clearly a focus on emotions, and there's a clear focus on emotional literacy or understanding emotions is a core part of or component of virtues. And that includes reflecting on emotions and trying to get to grip with how emotions relate to our thoughts and actions. And within that, there is a sense of well-being, but well-being can be a very general term. We have to think what character education brings with it is this sense of what it means to be a good person, sense of flourishing. And again, flourishing, well-being, these are terms that are often used, but it's often hard to pin down precisely what we mean, but also not only what we mean, but why are we doing them? What are they good for? And one example we use in the book, and I think this is a really powerful example with teachers, we use it with our master's students on our MA character education program, is from an author called David Brooks in the States, who wrote a book called The Road to Character. And Brooks distinguishes between resume and eulogy virtues. So he says, well, you know, the eulogy virtues are the things that really are important. This is how we're defined at our funeral, whether we're a kind person, honored person, etc. They're about our relationships. But actually in the real world, at the moment, we have too much focus on resume virtues. So it's not to say resume virtues aren't important, but, you know, what goes on our CV, and how we can get a job, etc. But that focus and tipping the focus of the balance back towards these resume virtues, I think are really important because they give a sense of direction about purpose. And they give children to, at least to think about their purpose in life. And those are very important when we think about well-being. So well-being is important, but it needs to serve a particular purpose or be directed towards a particular purpose. Where mental health is concerned, I think we're on tricky territory, if I put it like that, because I think a lot of things are now sort of grouped together under mental health. And let's go back to when we have conversations with school leaders and teachers who have successfully embedded character education within their schools. I think what they would say is that character education, similar to other things, so we might talk about exclusions, we might talk about character and sport, but that the character education provides a framework and a foundation from which to develop and a language from which to start. That doesn't mean that it will solve everything. That doesn't mean that you don't need specialist interventions, particularly, for example, where mental health is concerned. We might also talk about anti-racism, for example. So character education provides a platform. It has a language around mental health, around social justice, for example, that can help and that can focus discussions, but it can't do everything for everybody. So we do still need that expertise around mental health provision and mental health services that we know are under pressure and are strained. So I'd just be a bit cautious about those links, particularly between character education and mental health. Character education done well will certainly not act against people's mental health, but that we still need that specialist intervention, specialist services for mental health that can build upon character education and relate to it, but character education can't do the full job, if that makes sense.
So character education is part of the wider jigsaw puzzle that we need to be thinking about. Absolutely. When we're looking at the holistic education of our young people. So moving on, that takes us nicely, Paul, to something I'm going to pick your brains around. So in the book, there is a whole chapter dedicated to the character of the teacher. Can you explain more why you see the teacher's character as important? Because so far we've talked a lot about pupils.
Absolutely, thank you. Yeah, really important question to address. Well, we all know, those of us who are educators or who are entering the profession, that most of us have entered the profession because we want to develop good pupils, good individuals, good contributors to society. And that's normally the motivation, not just through a love of our subject, but wanting to instill a love of the subject in others, and to be there and to contribute to kind of wider pupil development. And of course, teachers are role models for pupils. This is something we emphasise in that first chapter. Just to check, it's not the first chapter, is it? It's chapter two, within the second chapter. So after the introduction, chapter two focuses on the character of the teacher. So we wanted to emphasise that from the outset and how teachers are role models for their pupils. Mike and I were fortunate enough through some of the research of the Jubilee Centre in the previous phase of research in the Teacher Education Project to interview a number of trainee teachers from the University of Birmingham and the University of Warwick. And that was the overwhelming impression from those trainee teachers. That was their motivation for entering the profession. And something that really became clear to us was that the majority of those individuals had an inspirational role model in their schools, and they reflected on that within the interviews, who inspired them to become a teacher. So they didn't realise it at the time, but as they grew up and as they evolved into what they wanted to do professionally, it was because of that role model, because of the time they had in school with those individuals, be it one teacher or many, that inspired them to want to do the same for others. And actually a couple of the interviewees said that they didn't have those role models in their schools, in their context. So they wanted to be the role model for others. They wanted to change that and be a good role model within their school context. And I think we could talk a lot about this, and I'm sure Andrew and Michael will pick up on some more aspects, but I just wanted to share an example from my own practice. Second year of teaching, I'd finished my NQT year, I'd taken on a subject leader role in a primary school context, and I had a lot of work to do. I mean, I was marking at lunchtimes, and I wasn't doing the things that I loved doing in school and that the pupils loved doing in schools, which was being outside, exploring, pupils showing their creativity and their investigating skills. And I remember three of my year six pupils coming in at lunchtime, and I was sat at my desk marking. And they came in and asked if I'd come outside because they'd discovered a newt in the pond. And I said, I can't, I've got to get this marking done. And something just clicked in me. I looked up as they walked out of the classroom and in the big windows that led outside. And I saw their faces and how disheartened they were that I was too busy to come outside and they'd approached me about it. But I thought, you know, what am I doing with this? I put the marking down and went outside because that was that experience, that opportunity to spend time with them and to speak with them about the new and just for them to show that kind of love of the outdoors. That was more important than the market. I think sharing examples like that, especially with those entering the profession or those who are at times I know are overwhelmed with the amount of work they've got to do, if we can take it back to the reason we got into teaching in the first place, I think that really helps as a motivator to prioritise what's important in schools.
But also, exactly, as you were saying that story, this applies equally to people that have been in the profession a long time and are perhaps sat there feeling a bit done too, and maybe they're feeling compromised. There's some tension between what they value and how they're acting and what they're prioritising. It's really hard. I think it's a tension that teachers come across quite regularly in their work now.
And I hope that the work of the Jubilee Centre, the book, the information within it, I hope it can be a catalyst for conversations within schools, especially amongst the senior leadership team, to say, what are our priorities? How are we contributing to character education and to personal development? And perhaps, in some cases, this will help to just be a catalyst for those conversations and to reprioritise what we're doing in schools.
It goes back to something that Michael said earlier about being brave and having, I'll add, have courage as a leader as well in making those steps forward. I think that's really important. Not always easy, like you say, but important. Michael?
Yeah, I was just going to add two quick points to that. There is some research out there that when they ask they've asked a series of pupils, I think it was from the Netherlands, about who they see as their role models. Teachers actually came below, you know, often sporting heroes, pop stars, family, friends. And then when they did a similar survey with adults, who do you think has had the biggest impact or been a role model? Teachers actually end up coming second behind family. So often I think we have to bear that in mind as teachers, that though we might not get that feeling from pupils that we are role models, that they are inspiring to be like us or emulating us, even as our as sometimes Aristotle would say, but we have to be aware of that, that actually we do have a lasting effect. And not to be outdone by Paul's story that way when he was at school, but I'll give one. I became a teacher because I had a great teacher in year three and six, and I remember her to this day. And I actually became friends with her after I left school and did some research in her school. And it came full circle that me and Paul were giving a lecture at the University of Birmingham to PGCE students. And her daughter was training to be a teacher and was on the back row. But it just shows, and I tell that story, and it was about how her mom influenced me to become a teacher because of that positive. And it wasn't because she was the best, you know, history teacher or the best maths teacher. It was because of her character. And I just think we have to bear that in mind as teachers, that that impact we have, even if it's on that child sitting at the back that you don't know, or that child that always comes up to you, that we are influential role models all of the time, and importantly, in and outside of school.
And I would come back at you and say, you said they're not necessarily the best teacher, but they're the teacher with character. I'd say so the best teachers are those with character. You know, knowledge only makes up part of the parcel. It's how you care. It's everything round. You know, I've had some really knowledgeable teachers. My children have had some really knowledgeable teachers that have sat opposite a parents' evening. There's no connection. They hate the subject. They're not doing so well. And actually, it's because they're missing that bit, the character bit, the role model bit.
It's about forming, it's that ability to form the relationships with us, with, which kind of comes from your character, which makes those good and outstanding teachers. As you said, it's not having, you do need great subject knowledge, but it's not the be all and end all of being a good teacher. It's, as Paul said, and as the chapter in the book says, it's about the character of the teacher.
Andrew, you've got something to add.
Thanks, Catherine. Just a couple of quick things to add to this. Firstly, that I think, and it really speaks to the context and the language and opening up the opportunity, which again is something that comes through time and time again with the schools that we work with. Firstly, that this isn't, these questions aren't specific for teaching as a profession. Jubilee Centre's done a number of studies, but one at the moment with the police, we've looked at nursing, doctors, lawyers, a whole range of different professions, to think about matters of character for people at different stages of their career. And all of these professions, firstly, they're morally driven professions. They're about service and care for others, but they're facing similar pressures around time, around workload, those contextual pressures that can limit what people do and what professionals do in terms of their patients, their pupils, and so on. So I think there's some shared conversations there around the professions and the importance of context. But also, again, those conversations that sometimes when we're isolated or where we work in environments where we feel isolated, we can put up barriers and not have the conversations. So I think that bravery is also in breaking down the barriers to conversations. And a clear point of example, we did a study a few years ago at the centre looking at parents. And just as a brief headline, when parents were asked, do you think your school's teachers prioritise sort of the academic success or character development, the parents thought teachers prioritised academic success, teachers thought parents prioritised academic success, but when you asked them what they actually wanted, both parents and teachers prioritised the development of character. So I think sometimes, you know, breaking down that barrier and having the conversation with a vocabulary that helps this can really build that meaningful connection, that this is why we're, hopefully, why we're parents, why we're educators, why we're nurses, etc. in the first place. Again, it doesn't mean it's all easy and simple, but this is what drives us and sustains us. And I think that those conversations are so important.
Okay, I want to move on and pick up from one of the positive impacts that Michael mentioned earlier. And if you remember back to the post-winter lockdown, when children began to return, it was about 6th of March, when children began to return to their classes after a long time at home, our Secretary of State for Education came out and communicated over and over again, he's a fixation, perhaps you could say, at that moment in time around poor behaviour in schools and what needed to be done about it. And you've already mentioned that the delivery and the embedding of character education can have a positive impact on behaviour. What are the key links, do you think, Paul?
Thanks. So, as you mentioned, we've mentioned that there is that link between character education and behaviour. And as Andrew mentioned earlier, there have been some schools who have openly said that their character education approach has been transformational in their school. And importantly, that it hasn't been an easy journey to that. It's not a quick fix, the wave of a magic wand. It's taken hard work and a long time to embed and to implement. And I think some of the case studies really do show that. So there's chapter 5, which is focused on behaviour within the book. And we share some of those examples, and you can hear the voices of those teachers and leaders in the school explaining how they've embedded it and the effect that it's had. But if we take it just to basics, it stands to reason that if you focus on developing kindness, understanding of what kindness is, self-regulation, empathy, compassion, that's going to have an impact on the way that pupils see themselves, the way they see others, the way they interact with others, and the way they, if we think about kind of behavioural incidents and responding to those, the way they respond to those when they inevitably happen in a school context. So one area we've looked at, for example, within that chapter 5 is how character education works alongside rewards and sanctions in schools, how teachers might approach restorative practices, how they speak with pupils after instance, and how pupils have time to reflect on their actions, their impact on others. What it all boils down to is this language, this understanding that's been developed within those school contexts, and that's where they've seen the positive effects there. Just to say, you mentioned about the Secretary of State for Education mentioning behaviour in schools following the lockdown. This isn't something that's just in England. We've got students studying on the MA Character Education from all over the world. And some of our students in the States, in one of their modules, which is about interventions related to character education in schools and organisations, the students are asked to develop, plan, develop, implement and evaluate an intervention within their context. Quite a number of our students have developed interventions in response to going back to school after lockdown, mentioning about pupils not speaking with each other, not interacting with each other, or not knowing how to respond or react to incidents, or how to discuss issues in their friendship groups. So they've actually developed these character education interventions to see if they have an effect. And there's been some really promising small-scale research within these master's essays and assignments. There's some really promising findings that I'm sure many of our students will pick up on in their dissertations as well. So we can see, even if it's anecdotal in some cases, we can see that there is this positive impact when it's delivered in that way.
And a much more proactive approach to, so, you know, looking at behaviour through embedding of character education rather than constantly looking at behaviour around rules and sanctions. So a much sort of more proactive engagement of children. So lastly then, as we finish off, if after listening to this or reading your book, if a teacher is really keen to now go on and consider character education more, and they want to develop their knowledge further and even begin to embed this approach within their schools, what would you recommend they do, Andrew?
Ms. Catherine, I think I'd perhaps point to three things. The first is to have a real deep think and consideration with others as well about what the school or the educational organisation they're currently in is already doing, what's working and what's not already working. And to think about what aspects of current practice you want to keep, you want to develop, and what aspect needs to change. So, you know, we know schools that said actually, you know, that we needed a new set of virtues that we had to, you know, or we wanted to develop in community by discussing with parents and pupils and community members and staff and so on. Others have said actually the key for us was about those relationships with staff or between staff and pupils, that often guided, as Paul spoken about, by a consequence-based behaviour management system where everything was very confrontational and it was very, you know, leads into immediate arguments and sanctions, discipline. It wasn't really going anywhere. So start with what's already working, what's already positive, what can already be built upon, and then identify areas to change. I think another key element is to learn from others. So whether it's the Jubilee Centre's framework, whether it's schools that have already got character education embedded, whether it's the Association for Character Education. So just look at what others are doing, but with the view that you have to make these your own. So it's not about taking something like a set blueprint and transposing it over to your own environment. It's taking bits and thinking, well, what might this look like? What could this look like within our own environment and with our own context? And then the third one, and I think probably this is the fundamental thing that comes through time and time again through the schools we've worked with, and that's about the importance of language. Now, perhaps one of the easiest ways to explain this is, well, it doesn't matter whether we have three core virtues or 10, or some schools even have 15, and what they are. Not really. Most schools will teach a wider set of virtues, but it's the language, it's the shared understanding, so that when pupils say, you know, we're a school that promotes kindness, or we're a school that promotes compassion, or whatever it might be, that the parents, the pupils, the teachers, the staff have a clear sense of what that means for them not 100% fixed. There's always scope for, well, in this situation, compassion might have meant this, or here's a different view about compassion that we should discuss. But you have a degree of fixed language and shared language that can really bind everything together. And the best example of this for me came when I was doing some work in Australia and speaking to school leaders. And one of the teachers in a school that were doing lots of individual things put it best when they said, actually, when I look at other schools, what we don't have, we have lots of dots, but we don't have a language that joins the dots for pupils and for parents. So I think that language plays a really important role in that foundation, but also bringing things together and drawing them together.
Brown. Michael, what would you add?
Thank you. Andrew has covered a few things I was going to say, but for me, I think what the first thing is, and most schools will say they know this or they do this anyway, but I think you need a real deep understanding of your pupils, your staff, and importantly, your community. What sort of virtues? I mean, we go to, as Andrew said, many schools, when they start to do this, will think, actually, our school values or our school virtues need to be changed. And we hear stories of school leaders have gone out into the community. They see where the pupils are living. They get a sense of it. What, you know, maybe, for example, one head teacher always told us that he realised his pupils in the school lacked ambition, and therefore they made that one of their school virtues. So I think understanding your pupils, staff and community, so you can then, and we've touched on this, you can go on to make a strategic plan. You do need a plan for character education. It's not something you can just sit around the table and go, it sounds great, let's do it. You do need to sit down and make a strategic plan, whether that goes into your school development plan. You make targets. I'm a governor at a school and they've done that and it's worked very successful. And Andrew's totally right. Engage with other schools. And we did some research, myself and Paul, while we were developing the Jubilee Centre's online CPD programme for character. And we asked teachers, like, kind of, what do you want in CPD on character? And they said, we want to learn from experts in the field, which I suppose is the Jubilee Centre, and if you're reading our book. But they want to see it in action in schools. And that's very hard to do. And we call it windows into school in the CPD. But I think you've got to try and engage with schools, look at good practice. It doesn't mean you can pick it up and drop it immediately into your school, because character education doesn't work that way. But it might inspire you. There may be some pieces you can take up. And I would advise people to look at the Jubilee Centre CPD online. And it's free to register. And we've had over 520 schools in the UK already look at it. And that gives you an extensive view of what character is, but how to develop yourself potentially as a character education lead. And I think what we looked at the beginning of that research was, at that point, there was no training available for character education. We did an extensive search. So engage with that training, disseminate it into your school, and have fun with it, really, because it's quite, every school we speak to is so excited by doing it that I think it can, you know, see it that way. It's not something else to do. It's exciting. It's infused. You should be infused by it. So that would be my advice.
And Paul, the hardest job to add anything.
Yeah, quite a lot covered already there. Three really quick things from me then. Slight repetition here, but one, I'd say get into schools. If you can visit a school that's been either awarded the ACE Kite Mark or Kite Mark Plus, or a school that's mentioned within one of our publications at the Jubilee Centre that's been kind of noted for its character education provision. These schools are really welcoming, and I know that in the current climate it might be a little bit more challenging to get into those schools, but if you can, absolutely do try. Failing that, and in addition as well, definitely look at those Jubilee Centre publications like the Windows into Schools and other publications on the website that really give you an overview in kind of case study form about what goes on within those school contexts. And thirdly, I think this is probably the most important, and it links to the book as well. So we have some activities, some reflective activities within the book that encourage readers to look at their own provision in their schools, to evaluate the provision and to reflect on some of the questions and issues that are mentioned throughout. And this ties in with the Jubilee Centre CPD programme that Mike mentioned, that was developed by Professor James Arthur and Mike and myself and others within the centre. And this is that we would encourage readers to evaluate what's going on and to use the evaluation handbook for schools that was developed by the Jubilee Centre. It kind of gives a framework for evaluation. So the book alludes to that, and it mentions some of those activities that you can evaluate your provision through, and then to maybe take on the evaluation handbook to do a more in-depth evaluation. What do we currently do well? What gaps or areas could we develop further? I think they would be the next points to consider.
Brilliant. Well, we've covered a lot in the time that we've been talking, and it's so interesting. I'm certainly enthused. I would be enthused if I was a teacher listening to go out and make the first steps. So the book Understanding Character Education is available now, and you can access the link to Amazon and other booksellers on our publications page. And don't forget as well to drop by the Jubilee Centre web pages and check out their CPD programme and their case studies. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you very much. Thank you.